All right, we are continuing our class on the book of Numbers, and we didn't quite finish up chapter 12 last time, so we'll look at that. This is continuing our part of this section of we're getting ready to leave Sinai. And remember that the book of Numbers is leaving Sinai, numbering there, learning how to march, and learning their marching orders, where to camp, that kind of stuff, and then we're going to different sites. And we are going to, tonight, get to the Promised Land and fail to enter it. All right, so we're going to deal with that. We're going to deal with one of the most famous passages, or some of the most famous things in the book of Numbers tonight. So hopefully we can get time to do that. So chapter 12 deals with Miriam and Aaron murmuring against Moses. And we start off in this chapter, and it says, "Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman, just in case you didn't know she was a Cushite woman. And they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Are you hearing that? Has he not spoken through us as well? And the Lord heard it." All right, so as I cannot help but, as I read this first section here, as we get into what's going on here, that it is like God overhearing some kids fussing in the back of a car. All right, then you'll see why here in just a moment. All right, so they're fussing because he's going out with this Cushite, or he's married to this Cushite woman, right? But not only that, there's a question of authority here. And this begins to kind of ripple through some other things that happen through the chapters we're going to be looking at tonight. A question of a hierarchy, a question of authority. You take some people out into a wilderness and you say, hey, we're going to do this new thing. Do you think they're going to question those who are in authority? Of course. That's human nature to do that. And so we're going to be seeing some of that here. And so it starts here with Miriam and Aaron. And so verse 4, and suddenly the Lord... let me just mention this. Verse 3. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Why would you think this is like a... It's probably awkward for Moses to write that if he was such a humble person, right? Because God told him to write that. But why was this placed here, do you think? His authority is questioned. They're fussing about him because he married this Cushite woman. God heard it and took action. We don't see Moses doing anything. Why do you think his humility was mentioned here? Any guesses? Yeah, I'm not going to deal with that, right? Maybe that's possible. That's kind of what I was thinking. Maybe he's just not dealing with it, and God's saying, well, I'm going to deal with it. God heard it, and he deals with it. Verse 4, and suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, you three come out of the tent of the meeting. How many of you said this like as a parent? You three, get out here. Okay. So the three of them came out, and the Lord came down in a pillar of a cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent, which I felt like my dad was like that every once in a while, and his veins popping out of his forehead. And he said, and Miriam and Aaron had to come forward, right? And they had to step forward. Yes, sir. And here's what God says to them. And he says, you know, there are prophets who I talk to, and I talk to them in visions and dreams, verse 6. If you want to write out here, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. I've talked to prophets in this way. Not so with my servant Moses, right? He's not like just any old prophet. What's different about Moses in verse 8? Oh, yes. I speak to him mouth to mouth, face to face, openly, not in the dark sayings, and he's beheld the form of me, right? He is not just some random prophet. Also, if you want to write out here Deuteronomy 18:18, in that God was going to raise up a prophet like unto Moses, this is important, right? And we talk about Christ and that kind of image in the future. That's pertinent information. He's not just some random prophet. He's very different. And so here's the importance of Moses. And then if this is who he is, why are you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? Dun, dun, dun. Here's the issue, right? And the angel of the Lord burned and he departed. What happened when he departed? The cloud goes up. What happens? Verse 10. Leprosy, right? Party in leper colony. All right, so here's leprosy. And what then ensues at that point? Aaron's like, no, don't be leprous. And Aaron's like, hey, oh my Lord, I beg you, this, you know, Aaron says to Moses, his voice is, his tenor has changed, right? Oh my Lord, I beg you. don't account this to sins to us. And so then Moses, he said they act foolishly. Don't let her be like one of the dead, which is kind of what, if you are a leper, you are like a walking dead person. Like, you can't be around anybody, right? So anyway, and so Moses begins to plead on her behalf. And God says in verse 14, like, if her father had just spit in her face because he was ashamed of her or something like that, or something she had done, then she would at least be unclean for 7 days. So she will do the term of her uncleanness. And she did, and she was clean again after the 7 days. And so God says, we're not taking that away from her. She's at least going to do that. And so then they moved camp again after that in verse 16. Chapter 13, enter the... Yes? We do not have information in that as to why necessarily Aaron was not included in what's going on. Because it says they said, right? We don't know. Reading between the lines might say that maybe she was the instigator. I don't know. We don't have an answer. I'm not going to say. Anything would be just guesswork on my part. Yeah. Stands to reason. All right, no, just kidding. Sorry, just kidding. Moving along. All right, so spies, chapter 13. So we have a situation here where we are coming to the promised land, right? Here we are, coming to the promised land. And God tells them to send out spies. And we're given an instruction about the type of the guys who are surveying the land. And the two guys here that we, you know, key in on are Caleb in verse 6 from the tribe of Judah. And then from the tribe of Ephraim. It says Hoshea here. But it's also the son of Nun, so we know the guy that doesn't have any parents is also named Joshua, Yeshua, is how you'd say it. And so actually verse 16 says, but Moses calls Hoshea the son of Nun Joshua. All right, that's like, you know, it's between he and Moses, I guess. I don't know. So they're the ones that are sent out, and they go out. And they're given some parameters on what they're supposed to do in verse 18. It says, see what the land is like, whether people live there are strong or weak, whether there are few or many, what's the land like, is it good or bad, what are their cities like, are they fortified, are they just living in tents, how is the land, is it fat or lean, are there trees on it or not, basically all the things you want to know about an area you're wanting to move into, like how are things, are there HOAs or what's going on in this, you know, in this area. So what's that? Starbucks, how many Starbucks are there, you know, that kind of thing. Do they take the app or not? So anyway, so all those kind of things, they're important when you're moving into an area. They ask those questions, and that's what they're supposed to come back. So they go out and spy out the land, verse 21, and they come back. What do they come back with? In verse 23. What's that? Yes, grapes. The valley of cluster of grapes. A single cluster of grapes that carried on a pole, which must have been a bunch, and pomegranates and figs. You know, they come back, look at these things. And so they bring these things back. Now, when they return, what happens? They give the report. Look at all these fruits. The land is amazing. However, what's that? Well, that's full of giants, right? And thus they told him and said, we went into land, verse 27, where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey. Check, right, there on that box, yes. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. It could have read this way, right? If this was a choose-your-own-adventure moment, this would be one of those places where we could have said, nevertheless, God will give it to us, and we will go in and take it, and like gone that route. But they chose option B. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and they forget about God. So they're making about the things that they're seeing, not about what they have seen and what they've seen God do. Like, we're forgetting everything that God has done for them already. All right? And so they pretty much just forget about all that. The descendants of Anak are there. Amalek is living in the land. Verse 30, Caleb tries to kind of come in and give a rebuttal for what's going on. He quieted the people and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up to him said, "We are not able to go up against it, for the people there are too strong for us." Do you see the issue here? Who are we talking about? Yeah, yes, it's obvious that if they were on their own, that they would not be able to overcome them. But this was not about them. This is about God working with them. And so they have forgotten all that. It's like they're not trained military people, right? Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah? What's that? Yeah, so they... Yes, and so these are leaders of households, right? These are leaders, these people that were selected to go out, were leaders of their households, and they're not being, like you're saying, they're not being the leaders that they're supposed to be, and they're making poor decisions here in this. And so they gave a bad report, it says, verse 32, of the land. And the land, it says, this is a land, and this is like a, what do you call this? A foreshadowing here. The land through which they have gone is spying out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people who we saw in it are men of great size. And again, they're focusing on their own sight. They're not big enough. And so they don't go. So what happens? I didn't move that, did I? Okay, well, now we rebel. We rebel at this point. In chapter 14, all the congregation lifted their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled, and they rebelled. Would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. These guys are super dramatic. Have you noticed that? Like, super dramatic. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. And Moses and Aaron fall on their faces. So they begin to, talk to them about this. Caleb and Joshua also are the same kind of thing. The land which possessed through the spy out is exceedingly good. And if Caleb and Joshua are speaking and saying that it's a great place, if the Lord is pleased with us, then will bring us into this land which he gave to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Verse 10, but all the congregation said to stone them. We need to do this. But the congregation says, no, stone them. Let's go back to Egypt and make bricks. It'll be fun. Okay? Then the Lord steps in. The Lord said to Moses, how long will this people spurn me? How long will they not believe in me, despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispose them, and I will make you into a greater nation than they. And then Moses intercedes on their behalf. Again, kind of a foreshadowing of Christ. He intercedes here, and we don't want to do this. In verse 19, he says, pardon, I pray, the iniquity of this people, according to the greatness of your loving kindness, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Keep forgiving them, Lord. The Lord said, I have pardoned them according to your word. Surely all the men who have seen my glory and my signs, which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times. God was counting. Have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore, but my servant Caleb. And then he talks about how they're going to, just as they have spoken in their hearing, so I will surely do to you. Verse 29, your corpses will fall in the wilderness, even your numbered men, according to your, from 20 years old and upward. Surely you shall not come into the land which I swore to settle, except Caleb and Joshua. Your children, however, whom you said would become a prey, I will bring them in, and they will know the land which I have you have rejected. For your sons shall be shepherds for 40 years in the wilderness, and they will suffer for your unfaithfulness. Does that still happen today? That children suffer for the unfaithfulness of their parents? I've seen it. I've seen it a lot. Where children suffer because parents are not being the leaders in the families they need to be. It's a human condition that if we do not lead like we're supposed to in our households, our children and future generations are suffering for it. It happens here, and we'll see it continue to happen even later on in our study tonight. So a very poignant reminder of, as we're reading through this book, these are things that happened, you know, thousands of years ago, but mankind and in its infinite wisdom hasn't moved beyond these things that we continue to mess up. And so verse 34 tells them they're going to be in the wilderness for every day that they were in the land spying it out, that they're going to be in there for 1 year. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die. That is a dismal outlook from God. And so even those men who brought out the very bad report of the land died by a plague before the Lord, like then. They died then. Those bad spies died then, except for Caleb and Joshua. And then Israel, they decide, what do they? They get this message, and it says in verse 39, that Moses spoke these words to all the people, sons of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And then what did they do in the morning? Verse 40. What did they decide to do? We'll go fix it, right? We'll go do this, and we'll make it all better, I promise, like it never happened. No. And that they're going up to the ridge, right, to go out and fight. And Moses is like, don't go. I don't know why you're doing this. Don't throw your lives away. I'm not leaving. You know, none of the holy items are leaving. God will not be with you. Do not do this thing. And they're going to go out. We're going to do it anyway. I do it. What happens? God was not with them, and they were routed and finished rightly, is what I guess you would say. And so they go. It's interesting, in verse 40 it says, here we are, we're going to go, and they die. So that doesn't work out for them. Chapter 15, we get some more laws for when they're in the land of Canaan. Various and sundry laws. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the sons of Israel. When you enter the land where you live, which I am giving you, then make an offering. And so we talked about several offerings they're supposed to make in chapter 15. And when depending on what they offer, there's a certain amount of a grain offering and wine offering they're supposed to offer, depending on if it's a bull or a ram and those kind of things. And so it's kind of just this ordinance. In verse 14, it says, if an alien sojourns with you, one of many among you throughout your generations, and he wishes to make an offering by fire as a soothing aroma to the Lord, just as you, he shall do as well. There's in verse 15, over and over again throughout Numbers, we see there's one statute, one law among you, one law for all the people, one law to bind them all is kind of the idea here. So not a different law for those who are sojourning and a law for the Jews, but everybody has the same law. Now, if they want to be doing these things, they want to practice these things, they want to proselyte, so to speak, they have to fulfill all the law. They have to be circumcised. They have to go through they have to be pure. They have to be cleansed. They have to do those kind of things as well. It's not like they just want to pop in and like, hey, yeah, let's do this, but not be amenable to everything else. It's all or nothing. It's kind of how we read this text. And so they get some information there. In verse 17 says, when you go in and you eat of the food of the land, you shall lift up an offering to the Lord, like the first of your dough, the first of everything that you do. You're supposed to offer that to God. But if you fail to do these things, like if you sit down at a meal and you forget to pray, this is your text, okay? Just kidding. Sorry. Long day. Okay, so they go in and they forget. If they forget to do this thing, then there's an offering they do if they unwittingly forget to do these things. And if they as a people do it, in verse 26, we're talking about an offering for everybody if they all forget, in verse 26. And then there's an offering, verse 27, if one person sins unintentionally, then there's an offering for that person that they're supposed to do. Verse 30, but the person who does anything defiantly, whether he is a native or an alien, that one is blaspheming the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord. So that's, you know, just outright obstinate in that situation. We return to narrative in verse 32. What happens in verse 32? Verse 32, what happens? Somebody's gathering firewood on the Sabbath. You're not supposed to do that. That's a no-no. That's a no-no. Now, it's interesting that they put him in custody because it had not been declared what shall be done to him. But actually, it has been declared. Just the details of it haven't. So Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11 says you're not supposed to do any work. You know, Sabbath day is supposed to be holy. Exodus 31, 14 through 15, you want to write that out there beside this, tells them they're supposed to die. But it's not explicit in how they're supposed to die. So the information they're waiting on is like, how are we supposed to dispatch this individual? And what does it say that they end up doing? they stone him, right? Which if all the people, and I don't know the details of how they did this, if all the people are going out and just like lining up and throwing one rock at him as they walk by, this would be a great heap of rocks around this individual, right? Even if it was just the men who are 20 years and older, if it's just the men who are doing this, it's still a great heap of rocks. So we don't know all the details of how they did it, but that would be a monument at that point. You know, under this pile of rocks lies a man who gathered sticks on the Sabbath, right? So, you know, that would be interesting to see how that played out. But verse 37, there's an interesting kind of a reminder here. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and tell them they shall make for themselves tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations. And they shall put on the tassel of each corner a cord of blue. It shall be a tassel for you to look at and remember all the commandments of the Lord, so you do them and not follow after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you play the harlot. So there's like a physical reminder on them, these tassels that hang down below, and you've maybe seen them on, you know, Orthodox practitioners still. These tassels, those are reminders of the commandments, and that they're supposed to make sure that they're following those things and they don't go beyond it. And so they're supposed to be holy. In verse 42, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So this is that information there about how they're supposed to be continuing to remember these things. Great, great reminders. Then the New Testament translation of that would be writing it on the tables of your heart, right? And making sure we put on the law have I hid on my heart that I might not sin against you. That's Psalms, but that kind of idea, that's an internal thing as well. Something that we should be doing throughout our lives. All right. Chapter 16. I will say I was a bit excited about getting to this chapter. All right. This is crazy things happen here. We are still challenging authority, all right? So, brother and sister are challenging authority. God said, hey, don't do that. Now, Korah is challenging the authority here in chapter 16. In these first few verses, we have this idea of what's Korah's rebellion and what he's going to do. And so, now Korah and the sons of Issachar and the sons of Kohath. Now, Kohath, Korah is of Kohath, pertaining to the sons of Levi. Excellent. Anybody remember what Kohath is supposed to carry? Kohath, what are you carrying? Well, Bob, today we're carrying. What are we carrying? Do you remember? All the holy things, all right? Kohath carries all the holy things, all right? So not only, they're not carrying sticks and golden pedestals and stuff, they're carrying the holy things. So if you're going to carry super special things, they're the guys, all right? So the sons of Levi, and then we have some guys from Reuben as well that are there, and they took action, verse 1 is what it says. And they rose up before Moses, and then 250 leaders of the congregation chosen. These are guys that were supposed to, that should know better. And they assembled before them, and they said, you have gone far enough, for the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? All right. Couple things here. What do you think he's arguing against? What is their beef right now with the leadership? We're holy, and why are you lording it over us? We can do it too, right? We should be able to do the things. You're not special. We should be able to do these things. So they have this self-proclaimed holiness, self-proclaimed level of things that they're supposed to be able to do, and then as well as this idea that they've been, you know, Moses exalted themselves over it. Yes, sir. Exactly. And in their minds, they're seeing a hierarchy. And I think as well, like, they're not seeing, not only did they put themselves over people that are carrying other things, but they're not seeing who assigned this. So maybe in their minds, they're just seeing Moses come out of the tent and arbitrarily say, hey, this is what's going on. They may not be hearing the instruction of the Lord that says the thunder's down. They're hearing Moses, you know, speak to them, and Moses is telling them what God has said. And they're saying that's not good enough. We're holy too. We're keeping ourselves. We're doing all the things. We're holy too. We can offer incense if we want to. And so they begin to push the threshold here of what has been prescribed. And so maybe it is the case that nothing, there isn't been this, it's just been God to Moses and Moses to the people. Moses saying this is what God is saying. And you can see where maybe you're thinking in the back of your mind, well, that's just Moses saying what Moses wants to hear, right? And then that word starts spreading around people. And so why does Moses get to do everything? You know, him and Aaron, like, they're so special. Like, nepotism, you know, amongst these people. And so do you see how that can kind of start to spread? Do you see how that kind of vocabulary, that kind of verbiage can tear apart a people, can tear apart a nation? And so here, this is happening. There's these that have raised themselves up. So Moses heard this and fell to his face because he understands what's going on. Look at how much in verse 5 Moses focuses on God's will. He says, he spoke to Korah and to all his company, saying, tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to himself, even the one whom he will choose, he will bring near to himself. Do you see that? What is Moses focusing the authority on? God's the one choosing this bub, right? Not me. You don't know what you've done. And so he tells them, all right, you guys all get censers, and you guys are going to come up here and see who God chooses tomorrow. The man whom the Lord chooses shall be the one who is holy. You have gone far enough, you sons of Levi. And so he tells them, all right, here it is. Prepare to meet thy God, right? So Moses knows kind of maybe what might be happening soon, but this is what needs to happen. And so they go up. And Moses says to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi, and continues to tell them. In verse 10, at the end of verse 10, he says, are you seeking for the priesthood also? And so this kind of peels back a little bit of what maybe they're trying. They're trying to get in on the priesthood thing as well. And then Dathan and Abiram, who had also gone out against them, the sons of Eliab, they said, we're not going to come up. We're not going to go and do this show. We're not going to come do this censor thing. It's not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey, talking about Egypt. He's talking about Egypt. It's not enough that you've brought us out of Egypt and you've died in the wilderness, but you've also lorded it over us. You became Mr. Bossy Pants, right? Indeed, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey. You have not given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Well, would you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. Are you going to take away their... They complainly see what's going on. We're not going to come up there and be a part of this. And so Moses gets very angry with them. Verse 20, the Lord spoke to Moses, you know, when they came up, they assembled in front of the tent. Separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them instantly. So he's talking about all the people, because all the people came up to the tent. Right? And so in verse 21, God is now saying, I'm going to consume them all. How many times has God said, I'm going to kill them all and start over? This won't be the last time. All right, it continues to happen. Moses intercedes. You don't kill everybody because of the sins of one. And so they they tell the people, instruct the people, get back from the dwellings of Korah, of Dathan, and Abiram. And everybody gets away from all their dwellings and everything, right? And he says, depart now, verse 26, depart now from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing that belongs to them, or you will be swept away in all their sin. So they got back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the doorway of their tents, along with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. Children suffering because of the unfaithfulness of parents. Moses said, by this you shall know the Lord has sent me to do these things, for this is not my doing. If these men die, verse 29, like everybody else dies, then that it won't be God. Verse 30, but if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, then they will descend alive into Sheol. Then you'll understand that these men have spurned the Lord. And as soon as he finishes talking, the ground opens up, swallows them all up, closes back in, like they were never there. And they're gone. And guess what happens from at that moment? People lose their minds, right? They're running around like the ground is lava. And then verse 35, fire also came forth from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. So the guys that were over there offering the incense, they also got consumed, right? The same way that Nadab and the sons of Aaron were also consumed. And so here, the censers, they get consumed, they get burned up, and the ashes, they tell them to spread the ashes around. But they have these censers, 250 censers of bronze, and they're told to hammer them out and then put them on plate as plating onto the altar. Now, the altar's already been plated, but these are to be set as reminders. It says several times, they shall be for a sign to the sons of Israel, extra plating on the side. It's obvious that this was here. These are going to be a sign. In verse 40, as a reminder to the sons of Israel, that no lame man who is not of the descendants of Aaron should come near to burn incense before the Lord. And so they take the physical, actual censers where these guys have done this thing, and they hammer them out because they've been cleansed by the fire of the Lord. They are now holy. You can't use them for anything else. They hammer them out, which is not a fun process in and of itself, but they do it, and then they attach those things, 250 of them, to the sides of this thing. To, you know, it's like decoupage on the side of this altar, maybe. But that happens. Now, verse 41. You sleep that night hoping the ground does not swallow you up, right? And you dream about these things that happen. And then the next day, you wake up and decide that it's going to be a great day to murmur again against Moses. I don't get this. But they did it anyway, right? But on the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel, you are the ones who have caused the death of the Lord's people. And so they're the ones that are saying that it's their fault. It's your fault all those people are dying. What? Does that make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. It's not my fault somebody did something wrong. It's not my fault that this happened. And so they're placing blame there, and it's supposed to be with God. And then verse 45, get away from among this congregation that I may consume them instantly. And they fell on their faces. So again, God spoke saying, I'm gonna kill them all. Hold me back, right? I'm going to get rid of them again. But Moses said to Aaron, so there was this plague that began to go out amongst them. And Moses tells Aaron, take a coal from the altar and put incense on it and go out with incense among the people. And so we see in the text here that he does that very quickly. He runs out and he does, you know, taking incense among the people to kind of like, so God would stop killing them. But in the time that took him to do that and go throughout all the people and come back to the temple, to the tabernacle, 14,700 people died. As they rose up to murmur against the Lord. You will be holy. You will be holy. Over and over again, people are doing this thing, rising up against God, rising up against what he has commanded them to do. And again, we see this in verse 17. God prescribes something to help them understand that what Moses or what Aaron is doing is from God. We have the Aaron's rod here, and so at the end of, where is it? Okay, no, it's 18, sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. So verse 2, speak to the sons of Israel and get from them a rod for each father's household. So 12 rods and have their names on all of them, right? And do the same thing with Aaron for the sons of Levi. And deposit them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony where I meet with you. Put them there. And what's supposed to happen? How is the priesthood chosen again, or at least shown that this is from God, not from Moses? The one that buds, right? The one that buds. Now, what's interesting here, on the next day when they went in, the rod of Aaron, not only, like maybe you've seen like a rod that you stick in water, or like a stick that you stick in water and it starts to bud little leaves or little shoots a little bit. You know, maybe you've seen that. Anybody do planting? Okay. I've Googled it. So, like, you know, that happens. It wasn't just that, right? The rod of Aaron for the house of Levi sprouted and put forth buds, produced blossoms, and bore ripe almonds. It wasn't like you could go in there and say, well, Moses just put it in a potter and, like, it gave it some water and gave it a little, like, no. It was beyond doubt that this was a miraculous thing that God had chosen Aaron. Again, this sign to them that he was chosen. This was again, for what we said early on, we're questioning authority out in the desert. And so God is, again, reestablishing that authority that this is what's happening. Aaron is the one chosen to be this person. In chapter 12, the sons of Israel spoke to Moses saying, behold, we perish, we are dying, we are all dying. We're all dying. Stop sinning, right? Stop doing this craziness, but they're doing it anyway. Are we to perish completely? We're going to see this kind of come back up again later on at the end of chapter 18, as we see again the duties of the Levites are reiterated, what they're supposed to be doing. And so we have Aaron. So again, Aaron is reaffirmed as, you know, he is a priest. God has chosen him. Again, we go into the fact that you and your sons, your father's household, you shall bear the guilt of the connection. So you're the ones that are going to be this intercessor for me with his people. And the tribe of Levi, they're going to help you. They're going to, verse 3, they shall thus attend to your obligation. You shall be joined with you and attend to the obligation, verse 4. And so Levi's helping them. And so because of that service, verse 8 and on, we start seeing what is their portion. So we're starting to see that the tribe of Levi, they're not going to get an inheritance when they go into the land. They get a few cities, and that's it. They're not getting lands to cultivate. They're not getting lands and things like that that they're getting. But all of their sustenance comes from these offerings. So when you read about an offering, that such and such offering, and the grain offering, and the wine offering, and that kind of stuff, all that goes to the Israelites. So God asks for that offering, and then those offerings become holy and in service to the consumption of the Levites and the priests and what they're supposed to be doing. So all these offerings are for them. And so it begins to talk about every offering, the sin offering, every guilt offering is a perpetual allotment for every one of your household who is clean, they may eat it. And again, the first fruits shall be yours. Every one of your household who is clean may eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. Every first issue of the womb of the flesh is going to be yours, except obviously those things that are unclean. They'll be bought back for a clean animal. And then first children that are born, they'll be bought back. It says, verse 16, as to the redemption price from a month old, you shall redeem them by your valuation, 5 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. And so talking about the firstborn of man shall be redeemed with silver. So parents had to pay the 5 shekels at a month old to the temple to redeem them back. So, and then it goes on talking about these things. Verse 19, all the offerings of holy gifts I've given to you as a perpetual allotment. Verse 20, then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in your land, nor own any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. Their service to God and their sustenance on a daily basis was tied to the people offering. So if there were lean Levites, and the Levites were very lean, that means what concerning the offerings of the people? They weren't offering like they were supposed to, right? So if you see a bunch of skinny Levites, it's because the nation isn't offering. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so, again, that's what we see here. And so I've given all the tithe as well, verse 21, the tithe is theirs. And then the it says here in verse 22, the sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, or they'll bear the sin and die. So this, if you want to tie this back to chapter 17, verse 13, and also tie that in with Numbers chapter chapter 1, 53 through 54. They were told already they weren't supposed to get near the tent, but they kept doing it anyway. All right, we'll pick up there in finishing this chapter next week. Thank you very much for your attention.